It was a royal commission that the former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and his replacement Scott Morrison didn't want to have. The banking sector in particular is bracing for the recommendations, given the possibility that Mr. Hain might refer civil or criminal matters to Commonwealth prosecutors, while financial regulators might also be in for a shake-up. Our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan, has been covering the inquiry and he joins me here in Canberra this morning. Pete, good morning. There's been so much anticipation about this final report. The government received it on Friday. Are there any hints as to what the commissioner is recommending?
Well, good morning, Sabra. Kenneth Hain's final report remains a tightly guarded secret. Journalists won't see the documents until a three-hour lock-up begins early this afternoon. The recommendations are highly sensitive, especially for banks, but also insurers and wealth managers, which is why the report won't be made public until the stock exchange closes and it's tabled in Parliament. Treasurer Josh Frydenberg will then hold a press conference to outline the government's response. His staffers have had the weekend to study the recommendations with high-level advice from Treasury officials, but so far there have been no leaks. The focus will be on how many recommendations the government will immediately accept and whether Mr. Frydenberg needs to buy more time if the recommendations are more far-reaching than expected. But already the opposition leader, Bill Shorten, has said there'd have to be an amazing reason not to accept the recommendations in full.
As you say, some of the recommendations could be far-reaching, but is there a chance that those who are expecting drastic action, like bankers going to prison, might be disappointed?
Well, this is the big question, Sabra. AMP is the big focus here. The fees for no service scandal and lying to the corporate regulator ASIC has raised the question of criminal breaches in the Royal Commission. It saw the exit of CEO Craig Miller, Chairman Catherine Brenner and three female directors. The Commonwealth Bank was outed in charging fees to dead people. The National Australia Bank's reputation has been smashed, resulting in the axing of high-profile executive Andrew Hagger. Insurance companies who've been cold calling people with disabilities were outed, and the integrity of some superannuation trustees was also called into question. But Dr. Kim Sheehan from the Sydney Law School at the University of Sydney told me no one should expect heads on stakes, not immediately anyway, and that dodgy bankers might not necessarily end up in prison, meaning some in the community might be disappointed.
The arguments were certainly in favour of there was misconduct. However, the obligation to provide financial services efficiently, honestly and fairly, it only puts at risk the licence. The bill that's currently gone through the House of Reps and is now in the Senate is seeking to redefine efficiently, honestly and fairly in terms of now being subject to a civil penalty provision. But that legislation isn't in place yet and it won't apply retrospectively. So if it's a penalty, it's going to be a fine and it's typically going to be imposed on a body corporate rather than necessarily on an individual.
Is it possible that some banking executives might face jail time?
Not the way that I'm currently reading how the Royal Commission counsel framed the arguments that were open to them.
Throughout the Royal Commission, we heard a lot of shocking evidence that distressed many Australians. But how does Kenneth Hain go when he's actually applying the law?
So this is where I think there's going to be potentially some disappointment or frustration with the final report, in that the way the laws are currently framed, they won't get in and deal with that conduct, because currently the law doesn't say treating your customers poorly is an offence or is a breach of the Act. It doesn't have that. And I think one of the key provisions that's going to be of interest, because we're certainly highlighted in a number of the counsel assisting arguments, is this obligation to provide financial services efficiently, honestly and fairly. Now, if we focus on the fair part, judicial interpretation of that has said it's about commercial morality. I think one of the problems for the banks is that how it sees commercial morality between the bank and a retail customer and the bank and a small and medium-sized business is quite different than how the focus might be if you asked a person in that position, what's commercial morality to you?
We're probably going to be hearing from the Prime Minister and Treasurer that this is an opportunity to restore trust and integrity in the financial system. But are you concerned that the final report from Kenneth Hain might not deliver the expectations that the community might be expecting?
I think the community needs to be aware of the limits that Kenneth Hayne faced in terms of what the terms of reference were that he was given and what the law is that he has to work with, you know, what the current law is. So if he's finding misconduct, he can only find misconduct in relation to existing law. So that's why I think it will be interesting to see how he deals with the conduct that was below community expectations and standards, because that's the kind of conduct that I think many Australians would have looked at and gone, yeah, that's unfair. That's unfair.
And of course, at the beginning of the Royal Commission, Kenneth Hayne did make the point that he wasn't there to provide justice, but to shine lights into dark corners that perhaps may raise big issues about the way banks operate.
Yes, he was asked to identify whether systems and practices that led to either conduct below community expectations or misconduct. And for me, one of the striking themes from the evidence was just how poor a number of the internal bank systems were. So this created the opportunity for the bad apples to just do their thing. So something as simple as ensuring that a document that needs to be witnessed is witnessed at the time that it's signed. Very technical requirement, but there was no systems in place to ensure that was complied with. That can have implications down the track if you're then trying to rely on that document.
So we'll see Kenneth Hayne's final recommendations after the close of the share market this afternoon. But going beyond that, just how difficult is it going to be to restore trust and integrity in the financial system?
It will be as difficult as the banks want to make it. But certainly, if they haven't already got the message, then the final report released later today will deliver that message.
Given the likelihood of civil or criminal referrals, surely the banks will be fighting this and possibly keeping some of these matters in court for years.
They have the potential to do that, but they also need to bear in mind arguments that were advanced by counsel assisting on the way through, calling into question how the banks conducted themselves in various forums. Doing something to restore trust is well within the power of the banks and the financial service sector to do, provided they're willing to step up to the plate and do it.
If we do in fact see civil or criminal charges referred to Commonwealth prosecutors, do you think banks will use shareholder funds to bankroll defences?
I think shareholders will be very alive to the potential for that. And so what shareholders need to be doing is to communicate very clearly their expectations about what is appropriate for the banks to fund, and more particularly, what is inappropriate for the banks to fund and what should be coming out of the wallet of the individual involved.
And that's a hard decision for banks because, after all, innocent until proven guilty, and everyone is entitled to a defence under our system.
That's true. But if there is potential for particular criminal findings to be made against individuals, and those individuals are still within the system, but in the interim, the bank then has a period in which it has to determine, should those executives stay in the day-to-day operations? Should they be out on leave? How are they going to be managed?
Cutting them loose.
Cutting them loose is an option. They have to be able to say they're justified in cutting them loose. If at the moment all we have is a Royal Commission saying this should be referred to the Commonwealth DPP.
Do you think you can ever eliminate bad apples from institutions, given what we've heard?
No, I don't think you can. Unless the banks suddenly become much better in their recruitment processes and vetting, but more particular with their systems and supervising more closely the activities of people on the way through.
And that's Sydney Law School's Dr. Kim Sheehan speaking there with Peter Ryan. And Peter, some of the banks have preempted the report by trying to change the way they do business. How long will it be before we customers know how the banks will respond to today's findings?
Well, the banks have already been racing to preempt today's final report, making their own internal policy changes and, of course, staff changes going right to the top. The big four banks weren't invited to today's stakeholder lock-up, although Anna Bligh from the Australian Bank Association, who we spoke to last week on AM, will be there and will be speaking once the recommendations are public. If anything, there might be a brief statement from the banks, but they'll most likely be buying time given the weight of the document and the impact of the recommendations. But it seems clear that business as usual is over for banks, and it's already back to basics, and there's already the makings of a credit squeeze from the tighter lending standards we've been seeing.
All right, the ABC senior business correspondent Peter Ryan.